Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 41. Dave, as Mike Tomlin said at his Tuesday press conference, it stings as much today as it did on Sunday. The Steelers are going to have to get by this. The game this week against Cincinnati in Cincinnati is now a huge game. And as always seems to be the case this season, we got a little bit of breaking injury news from Tomlin at the presser on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I don't know how surprised we should really be by it. I mean, he was a little bit of forthcoming last week talking about Sanders and his knee. Of course, Sanders wasn't in all week due to the death of his mother and being back home and all. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, okay, well, you know, he needs to get this knee looked at. Well, as it ends up being, he had the knee scoped. And, you know, it's probably something in there with some cartilage or something like that, probably a little flap or something that needed to get cleaned up. It was deemed a success, but Tomlin said he's out. He termed it a couple of weeks. Now, is that a couple of weeks as in calendar weeks, or is that a couple of weeks in game weeks? Hard to really tell. My best speculation is that he will miss, probably the Kansas City game after the bye week as well. He always tries to paint a pretty picture with these things to keep the opponent guessing. But right now, I would kind of hold my breath for him being back for the Chiefs game after the bye.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much in agreement there. Obviously, he's not playing this week. He has the bye week. One of those things that typically, you know, you're not coming back under a month. I think we're looking at the week after the Chiefs would be seemingly a decent target date. In terms of other guys, Mike mentioned that Sepulveda also had knee surgery. Things went well. Obviously, this was not the ACL for the first time. He's had three ACL surgeries. This was a torn meniscus in his punting leg, his left leg. You know, we don't know what his career is. One thing that's amused me, Dave, and we didn't really touch on this on Monday, is people are raving counting their blessings that Jeremy Kapanos was available. I mean, you know, look, Jeremy Kapanos is a punter. There are 32 punters in the league, and there are a lot of good punters in the league. I mean, it's nice to have him because the Steelers have some familiarity with him. Obviously, he was here last year in the Super Bowl run, and then in training camp, he went right down to the wire with Sepulveda for the roster spot. But, Jeremy Kapanos isn't Ray Guy of this era.
No, and he's not Mitch Berger, though, either. So,
excellent point.
You know, so, and that's the way I look at it. Look, Kapanos, we talked about this before the season and all, and I had the Steelers keeping Kapanos for the sheer fact, in my final 53-man prediction, for the sheer fact that I was worried about Sepulveda and the knee. And it wasn't that, you know, nothing against Daniel. God, I mean, boy, you couldn't find a better stand-up guy to be on a team. But let's face it, man, that we haven't talked about this since, I think, because on Friday I had Kabali and Dayon on. We didn't talk about it in the recap episode on Monday either. But you've got to think, you know, how many more chances do you take with Sepulveda here? Because this has got to be it. The guy's going to be, once again, an unrestricted free agent after this season, after his one-year deal this year. This has got to be it, right?
You know, I just don't know how to look at it, because I say you take the most talented guy and you say, can it happen again? Can he have damage again in that leg? I imagine if the Steelers find a guy who is clearly better, they'll obviously go that way. But if Sepulveda comes back, I mean, the question is, as you say, unrestricted free agent. If he comes back, they happen to agree to terms, and you get him because I don't see other teams taking a chance on him. And you say, you know, he comes and he performs and he does the job. I don't know. I mean, certainly this has to be close to the last draw. I was not a buyer of, you know, because of injury, you don't keep him around because you just don't expect that stuff to keep happening. But when it's happened to a guy three times in his 4 years with the Steelers and it happened to him once in college, then maybe you just kind of wave the white flag and say, look, you're a good guy, you're a good punter. But, you know, we just can't take the risk anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, here's the thing. You know, when he goes IR, you still have to pay him. You still have to pay another punter to come in on top of it. So, I mean, if you're okay with basically having $1.2 million tied up in a punter, I mean, you might as well go ahead and write that down. And in best case scenario, Sepulveda makes it through a season, you know. But like you said, you know, how many if Kapanos has a good rest of this season – this year for us, you have to wonder if he might not get an opportunity elsewhere next year. Now that they nobody was chomping at the bit for either Sepulveda or Kapanos, you know, this past off season. Sepulveda, I think, had perhaps a visit with the Texans, but that was it. So, you know, punters haven't killed us, you know, since the Mitch Berger day. You know, a couple of games with him that we've had, so that's why I threw that out there. As long as we're not hearing Kapanos' name on a weekly basis. Now, he didn't kick fantastic this past Sunday night, but at least he did on the final punt. You know, he pinned him back there at the 8-yard line on a kind of a tricky punt that you kind of wondering if it's going to bounce into the end zone and give him 12 more yards for a touchback. So it's something to think about. And you know, the rest of the injuries here that we need to go over. Steven Sylvester had some knee swelling along with Jericho Cotchery. The way I take it, both those guys are going to be fine. Hines Ward's doing well after his concussion-like symptoms. And, boy, have you ever seen Ward as wobbly as he was coming off that field the other night? Almost, you know, they tell you when in doubt, grab your head when you're injured and you don't know where you are, you know. He grabbed his ankle instead.
He grabbed his ankle, right. Yeah,
you know, Lamar Woodley, you know, he's going to be out. I just don't see how he comes back this week. I don't see how you risk it. We've talked about that. It looks like the Chiefs game. And even then, I wouldn't write that down in stone. James Harrison, boy, you know, can't say enough about what this guy did. He did not have a setback with his eye injury returning, which is good news. Let's see who else we got there. Arnez Battle has a hamstring strain. I think he battled this earlier in the year and didn't miss a game and came back. So no concern there. And the key thing that Tomlin didn't give an update on was Doug Ligurski. So, you know, that would make you seem that Ligurski's going to be out again. And it seems like Chris Hoke was ready last week. And, you know, he could suit up this week if they decide to dress the extra lineman, which extra nose tackle, which I doubt they'll do. I think they'll stick with Hampton and McClendon here right now.
Yep. I think it was interesting to that he said that you know, Hoke was able to go and he didn't get a hat because they wanted to dress the extra linebacker.
Hey, McClendon's been playing good. There's been no drop off, you know, when he's in there. So especially with the status, I guess, you know, kind of getting the young kids some snaps. I was kind of surprised. I'm not overly surprised Hoke was back, but I think we talked about it in the last off season. He was definitely a question mark to return, you know, and you gotta know that the end's coming soon for this guy. And if he's going to miss games, if he has a history now with these stingers and maybe a nerve regeneration problem, you know, you got to start thinking of moving ahead. And I really think McClendon has not been a drop off thus far. A little smallish, yes, probably a little not as versatile, but getting more versatile every game. So I would expect him to keep dressing McClendon for right now.
So let's wrap up the Baltimore game in terms of any further thoughts. I will point out again that I do think without having Hines Ward basically for the whole second half, without having Manny Sanders, I think you pointed it out. The red zone, that probably made a little bit of a difference. I think that hurt the Steelers. But, you know, coming away from the game, as difficult as the loss was, there are clearly four or five plays. If they go the other way, the Steelers win the game. And there are clearly things that the Ravens had go against them that could have made, you know, the game a little more tilted in their factor. These teams are two you know, as much as I hate to say it, these two teams seem to be at this point in time relatively evenly matched.
Yeah, and you know what? We talked about that final drive pretty much in depth on the last on the Monday podcast, and I've had time to go back through it, you know, several times as I like to do. And, you know, we talked about man coverage versus zone in that situation there. And I think I said, well, you know, I wasn't too concerned that it was man coverage in that situation. I'm going to retract that now. I think more of thinking about lines of what you were kind of hitting at there. You know, I think maybe they should have been in zone when you come to look at it, and kind of, you know, we all hate the word prevent defense, but that might have been the better situation, especially later in the drive there. Ryan Clark was on 93.7 last night. That they do that live remote with him and Charlie Batch and all. He was real candid in that interview that he was out of place on that final play. They were supposed to be in cover two with man under, and you can see a good breakdown of this on Chalk Talk with Tunch Yokin up on the Steelers website as well too. And Ryan said he wasn't where he was supposed to be, and he was playing a different coverage, which you could clearly see on some overhead views and the all 22 view of this as well. So you know, and Ryan also stated that there was miscommunication on the coverage that they were supposed to be in there. And if you go back and watch that entire last drive, there seemed to be a lot of miscommunication on the drive with people pointing and William Gay a few times not you know, just wondering who he had in certain situations. A couple of readers on my blog as well, too, have pointed out that, you know, we talked about the defer situation, and someone pointed out there that, hey, you know, maybe it's because, you know, they play so much man, maybe trying to limit the extra, here's the exact quote here, fatigue was a factor. Maybe playing man coverage is more tiring with the number of snaps, and avoiding an extra possession in the second half may have been a reason for the coin toss. Tafari goes on to say, I know the DBs say they can run all day, blah, blah, blah. A lot of them play special teams, Gay included and all. And, you know, maybe there was some fatigue factor in it. Another reader said, well, why wasn't Keenan Lewis on the outside with Torrey Smith? That's a good point, too. Keenan Lewis seems to have the more speed in the situation. Might have done a better job in that. But it all stems down to Ryan Clark not giving William Gay the help over the top on that final play. And, you know, that was the dagger. And if he's there and knocks that down, you know, Steelers likely win this ball game. And I hate to boil it down to one play. It's impossible to do that. So much happens during the game. But, you know, at least Ryan Clark's a man enough to come forward and say, hey, it was on me, and there was communication problems.
Yeah, you know, we mentioned a little bit on Monday, we're coming into the season very concerned about the secondary, the corners. You know, Troy Freelance is a lot back there. You know, I'll say it again. I think, you know, he's best served to be down in the box, but that means you've got Ryan Clark back there, and depending on what kind of scheme they're playing, you know, you've got Ike Taylor, if you're running around in man, and you've got Ike Taylor running around in man, well, then you've got, you know, there is risk. And the point is, when you play a team like the Patriots, who are going to try to take the quick hitters, they, you know, they'll throw a little bit vertical to the tight ends, but most of the stuff is crossing routes and you know, quick slants and things like that. Well, if you get beat there, you're going to get beat. You're most likely because of, you know, the Steelers are their secondary. I give them credit. They are a good tackling secondary. You're going to get beat for 7 yards, maybe 12 yards, but you're not going to get beat for 40 yards. Now, we saw the Ravens attack it differently, and we haven't seen the Steelers play much man, particularly against a team that wants to go vertical against you. And, look, you know, they could have won that game with 35 seconds left if Torrey Smith catches the ball when he's two steps behind Ike Taylor, and then he catches the one against Gay. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting now going forward here. We come into Cincinnati, and we've got a good interview with Joe Reedy, the Cincinnati beat writer, the Bengals beat writer for the Cincinnati Enquirer, coming up in the second half of the show. This is a team that doesn't have a ton of speed on the outside, but they've got A.J. Green, who's a young up-and-coming receiver who they used a high pick on, and they've got Jerome Simpson, and the guy Gresham is he's a quality tight end if he's healthy and able to go. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of defense the Steelers and Dick LeBeau decide to employ this week, because obviously they had great success playing the press coverage with the man-to-man against the Patriots, and I would say they had virtually no success or very little success playing it against the Ravens.
Yeah, and let's not forget how many drops there were in this game, too. I've got my coverage stats up, and, you know, unfortunately, even in man, when you're, it's a lot easier to see who's covering who than it is in zone and placing blame. Some of these stats are a little bit, you know, not as bad as what they probably should be based on the drops. Putting a bow around that last final play as well, too. Torrey Smith said after the game that he noticed man press coverage on Gay in that situation, and his read was to go deep, I guess, especially from where he saw Clark line up in the middle of the field there and not, you know, in a cover two half of the field deep there. So, you know, props to Torrey Smith for making the read there and noticing the coverage. I think Gay thought he did have help over the top. Or that it was going to be there. I think maybe, you know, and like I just said, I think maybe either playing some zone or maybe some more, you know, maybe some cover three in the situation, because the Steelers pride themselves on not giving up the big play, and they just put themselves in a precarious situation there with the coverages playing the man. You're giving a guy an opportunity to even slip and fall. You know, one play out of, you know, 50, 60, is all it takes for somebody not to have help over the top and be in man coverage and fall down and have a blown coverage involved too. I just don't think it was attacked good by Dick LeBeau this time around, and I bet it changes the next time. And on top of it, the Baltimore receivers are a lot more physical than the Patriots wide receivers are too. I think that played a big part in it. Bolden didn't have a huge game. But, you know, like I said, too, he did have two drops in the game as well, and he always seemed to have separation on Ike Taylor in man press.
Yeah, and that's it. And you know, maybe you just say, look, congratulations. They won the game. It's a big win for them. The Steelers, looking ahead now, Cincinnati, this game, as we discuss a little bit with Joe, this is a game that didn't jump out at you on the schedule. But as he correctly pointed out, if the Steelers were to lose this game, they're 0-3 in the division, and the division title you can basically write off. The converse, the flip side of that is that if the Steelers win this game on the road in Cincinnati and go into their bye week 7-3, get a chance to get some guys healthy, you could look at the schedule and say, you know, they might have a 50% chance of winning out and going 13-3. You've got the tough road game at San Francisco. At Kansas City is always a tough game. That'll be a nationally televised night game. But you've got the Rams, you got the Bengals again at home, you got Cleveland twice. It's certainly not out of the question that Steelers win all those games. And in fact, I imagine the Steelers will be favored in all of those games. So, you know, what are your thoughts coming into this game, a 6-3 team? I mean, is this a must-win game? Is this a game that, are the Steelers in real trouble if they lose this game, or is it how they play the game that's the issue here?
It's not a it's a must-win as far as the division goes, because I think there's an outside chance that Baltimore can slip up two times. Just based on the way they played, dropped a couple of eggs this year, I think it's a chance that the Steelers can still catch them if they win. They're basically going to have to win out, let's face it there. If they lose this game, then you're starting to think wild card. You're starting to watch the games around the league every week and hoping some of these teams lose and all, like Buffalo and New England perhaps and all like that. So from that standpoint, it's a must win if you want the division. But regardless, I wrote last night how, boy, the bye week's on the horizon and what a welcome sight it is. From the sheer standpoint is, man, if we can get healthy after all these injuries, and I'm not trying to, I mean, the Steelers have injuries like everybody else, but it really seems to have hit the Steelers kind of hard, especially on the offensive line and the linebacking group this season. If they can get past this game, whether it be a 12-10 game, I don't care. You know, as Tomlin likes to say, style points don't matter. I think they can get healthy after this bye, and I think indeed they do have a good shot at running the table. You mentioned the San Francisco game starting the season. The Bengals games and the San Francisco games we did not have circled on the calendar at all. And I think everybody in the Steeler Nation can believe that. I think San Francisco is a very dangerous team. That's going to be the tough game on the schedule. And the Bengals, haven't gone back last night and watched all their games on kind of the speed condensed version on NFL.com. This team's not a joke. You know, they, of course, they haven't played anybody. I think they've only played one team with a winning record, you know, along this stretch. But they're getting it done on defense. The offense is not turning the ball over and giving short fields. And they're, you know, they're winning. And that's what counts. So let's not chalk this up for a win. But I think this is a winnable game. And, boy, if we can only get healthy and get past this bye week, I think we're going to be in good shape.
Dave, I'll tell you what I look at this game. I look at this game, and I look exactly at last week's game of the Jets at Buffalo. You have a Jets team that people coming into the season thought was one of the elite teams. You have a Buffalo team that's surprised. Certainly winning at home against New England was a real win and a big win. And they go into that game, I think, 5-2 last Sunday, and they got the home crowd. It's exactly how I view this week's game. I really thought the Jets would go up and really put the hammer on them. And it, I think, you know, the answer for the Steelers, if the Steelers are an elite team that wants to make a deep run in the playoffs, they got to go put the hammer on the Bengals. The Bengals are, they're no question exactly what you said. They've played good football, and more importantly, they've played winning football, because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. But this is not a team with a bunch of great players. They've got some good players, and they've got good players kind of, you know, all over the team. You've got some young receivers, and as I said, Grisham, the tight end, is probably maybe the most quality guy on offense in terms of level at his position. But you've got a rookie quarterback, and this is the thing. We've seen rookie quarterbacks excel in this league the past couple of years, something that never used to happen. But the guy is going to see Dick LeBeau's defense for the first time. And it's too bad it's not week three. It's week 9 or 10 or whatever week it is, week 9, I guess. But this is where you would hope the Steelers' schemes and the things they're able to do and what they've done the past couple of weeks by playing, showing some different looks, really comes to their advantage. And they're able to take, you know, they're able to really shut down Cincinnati's offense. Certainly, Cedric Benson is the guy that they'll focus on the run game. But I expect to see them confuse Andy Dalton. And if Andy Dalton comes out and plays like Colt McCoy did in his first game against the Steelers last year, the Steelers might have some trouble.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And remember, before that game against the Browns last year, we were chalking it up as, oh, boy, we're going to kill this kid. And he played good. McCoy actually played very good. You know, the game got away from him there a little bit there. You know, they knocked out, wasn't that the game the James Harrison hit on Massaquoi and Cribs and all like that as well. Almost back-to-back knocking two guys out of the game was pretty huge in that situation. But McCoy still was able to use the short game, use his tight end, Ben Watson, I believe, in that game. And I believe they're going to take a long look at kind of what the young quarterback did and what McCoy did in that game. They're not a team that's going to beat you deep all the time. They're going to take their shots down the field, but they're really not overly a vertical team. They're a team that you just look at the stats on the yards per attempt on Dalton. You know, a lot of high percentage short stuff, and I think the Steelers, like you said, are going to try to confuse them, try to take away that type of short stuff. That's why I think you still could see more man this week, man press against Simpson and A.J. Green, and kind of be physical with those guys and make Dalton hold onto the ball a little longer than he maybe wants to take, you know, some 11 to 20 yard, you know, shots down the field together. So, yeah, we'll know what Andy Dalton is or isn't after this game as far as his rookie progression goes, because I really don't think he's faced, you know, too challenging of defenses thus far.
Right, and that's going to be the key. I certainly expect the Steelers to maybe not load the box with, you know, 8-9 guys in the box, but I expect them to be up hard on the line. I expect the Steelers to play the type of defense that we've seen the Steelers play over the past 5 years. I think you'll see the guys play 5 yard off cushion a lot of the time, help up top with the safety. But I do think you'll see Troy down in the box, certainly early in the game, daring the Bengals to put the ball in the air. And then on the other side of the ball, it'll be interesting to see how the Steelers attack. I mean, Hines Ward has said he's going to play. You know, you have pointed out, I think rightly so, that this defense has proven to be a solid, if not spectacular defense. In Clements and Leon Hall, they've got two decent corners. And as our man Joe Reedy pointed out, they have real linebackers now. And so, you know, it's a team that I think the thing that impressed me is being down at the half, whatever, they were down 17-7 last week against Tennessee. They shut them out in the second half. That game, I think, was in Tennessee, and they went on the road, and they won it, and that's a real win. You go down to Tennessee, you're down 17-7 at the half, and you come back and win that game by a touchdown. Good for you. You know they're going to be feeling good in that locker room. It's going to be a sellout for the first time in a couple of years. Certainly, I expect to see, you know, 20,000 terrible towels waving in there. But this is a game that, like you said, it wasn't circled on the calendar, and I think there's still a tendency we can't help ourselves to overlook it. But the Bengals, I think, beat us in Cincinnati last year, and it would certainly be more than a fly in the ointment if the Steelers don't get it done this weekend.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard. You know, we asked Joe, and I'm not, I'll tease it. I won't tell the listeners what he said, but, you know, I kind of asked him too, because going back through tape, it's hard to diagnose how exactly you need to attack, you know, a good Bengals defense that's solid against the run. And Tomlin hit on that hard and heavy yesterday during the press conference as well. So, you know, they've got a good defense, and I think that's what's been keeping them in a lot of these games as well, that statistically it matches up with what you see in the tape as well. So, another thing I meant to ask you about the press conference yesterday, David, was what did you think about the second answer? Now, I mean, he's been asked about the timeout late in the game and the field goal and all like that. What did you think about the set of answers Tomlin gave yesterday on it?
Confusing, maybe. Confusing.
Are you really going to have Jeremy Kapanos call a cadence to draw him you know, to try to get the extra 5 yards here? I'm having a hard time believing that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, certainly he got I would say mildly mocked on Twitter for that excuse. And I know there's some guys like Jim Wexel out there who said it was a real mistake not to kick the field goal, citing kind of the results of college kickers kicking into that end so far this year. I think 5 for 7 from 40 to 49. There certainly was no wind and things going on. I would have kicked the field goal myself. That's why you have your kicker on the roster. I would have kicked the field goal. I don't have a problem with the decision they made, but I certainly found it a little bit amusing about how he described going through the process, because, you know, you can't, thank God, you know, that's not the Super Bowl or something, because you don't want things like that happening there, you know, with 2.5 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, I think Tomlin just got caught with his pants down there, literally. I think here's what I worry about, is it screams I don't have confidence in Sean Swisham, okay? And, I mean, plain and simple, that's what it screams. If you were honestly going to try to catch a team offside, you send Ben back out there, you try to draw him offsides with a quarterback that knows what the hell he's trying to do as far as acting like he's going to go for it there. I still don't, you know, he stood by the thing about not wanting to burn the timeouts there. I'm just not buying that. I think Tomlin knows he made a mistake in that situation. It was a poorly coached situation. You know, in the long run, you know, we'll see where this puts it, you know, after the season goes over, you know, how big of a game this actually was that we lost. But, yeah, I kind of look like Tomlin wasn't matching up his answers from the other night here.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on that. All right, Dave, so we get to the interview with Joe Reedy. You've got anything else you want to close up with from the Baltimore game? We're taking a look at Cincinnati. We'll be back certainly on Friday with our preview and our picks for the week. But Joe Reedy's a beat writer for the Cincinnati Inquirer. You can follow Joe at Joe Reedy on Twitter this week, R-E-E-D-Y, to get the latest info on the Bengals. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. We're pleased to have as our guest Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Joe's the beat writer covering the Bengals. Joe, I appreciate you taking the time joining us here on the Terrible Podcast.
No problem.
Hey, Joe, before we get into what's been going on with the Bengals season, can you just give us an update on the injury report and how the Bengals are physically coming into this week's game?
Yeah, they should be healthier compared to the past couple weeks. Ray Maluga, who's had a high ankle sprain and missed the last three games, should be set to go. He should practice this week, probably some individual work today, and then try to get more into it on Thursday and Friday. Adam Pac-Man Jones, who has really played only one play this season because he was on the PUP list to start the year, had that big punt return and then strained a hamstring, should be more set to go this week. And Jermaine Gresham, who's had a hamstring and has missed the past couple games, all indications are that he'll practice too. Carlos Dunlap suffered a hamstring injury late in the Tennessee game. He thinks it's a lot better, but it'll probably be day-to-day. There'll probably be a lot of guys that show up on the practice report today. Chris Crocker usually sits out Wednesdays, but those four players would be the key ones right now. And Donald Lee, I saw he was walking around in a boot on his foot Monday in the locker room, but usually with those things, it's a foot sprain, but I don't think that's going to slow him down any.
Right. Hey, Joe, in terms of you look around the NFL, there's certainly not a team that's flying more under the radar than the Bengals. I mean, you've got the 49ers with Jim Harbaugh. They're a little bit of a high-profile thing. They've gotten a lot of recognition with only one loss. Cincinnati comes into this week 6-2 with a rookie quarterback, A.J. Green and Andy Dalton being a big part of what's going on. Is there any kind of sense in Cincinnati that because they've not yet played the Ravens and they've not yet played the Steelers, that there's a lack of respect for the team around the league? Or is this something that they're just going about their business and they don't really care about that?
I think they're going about their business. I think the fans get more into the respect factor more than anything. But this is also a fan base that this is the first sellout of the year. And due to that, I think it's a lot of Pittsburgh fans traveling into Cincinnati to make that sellout happen. This team is kind of happy right now being under the radar. And for once, or the first time in a very long time, it's a drama-free locker room. About the only quote that raised eyebrows this year was before the Buffalo game, after the Niners loss, when Marvin Lewis said, "When we are 2-2." Other than that, there aren't the weekly proclamations that we're going to do this. There's no packages being mailed out of Paul Brown Stadium. And the concern among the players is more on wins than how reality shows are doing and Q ratings, which is a change from what's happened here the past couple of years.
Right.
Joe, when you look at the Bengals statistically on offense, you know, nothing really jumps out great overall, but they seem to be getting it done, you know, because when you look at stuff like their, you know, just basic stuff like yards per play and stuff like that, is it a byproduct of them just not asking Dalton to do too much and just don't turn the ball over and let the defense do what they do and set up, you know, maybe some short fields? How is Gruden kind of taking, you know, approaching his work with Dalton?
I think the biggest change with this team, maybe compared to past years, is that if they got a punt, it's not a bad thing anymore. And there's really, with this team, outside of the Frisco game, Dalton has not thrown the crippling interception. Now, he had two against Seattle, which led to points, but they're not ones that you go, that turned the tide of a game, except for maybe Frisco when they had a chance to drive late and there was a miscommunication between him and Gresham and Frisco picked it off at the about the 15-yard line. There's not the killer turnovers. Last year, especially in that 10-game losing streak and early on, you could point the key turnovers that changed that game. And I think that first game here last year between the two teams, there were a ton of turnovers. Special teams contributed to a lot, And there were a couple bad interceptions that Palmer threw that led to points, too. So it's not the killer turnovers. Defense playing a lot better compared to last year. They're a lot more stout against the run. Secondary struggling a little bit, but they've got a sustained pass rush now, too, which helps a lot of things.
Yeah, you mentioned the pass rush there, and it looks like, you know, they're getting things done almost. You know, not one player sticks out in particular. I think you got, about four or five people with three sacks, and then Geno Atkins, I think, with four. It just looks like it's more of a signature Marvin Lewis kind of lunch pail type defense. You got Nate Clements really coming on over there in the secondary. Can you put your finger on how they've been able to get these guys to come around so quick, especially a guy like, say, Thomas Howard?
I think for once, when you would compare the Steelers linebackers to the Bengals linebackers, it wouldn't be close. In fact, it wouldn't even be in the parking lot of the ballpark. And now finally, in Marvin's 9 years, I think he's got a group of athletic linebackers that, where you compare them against the Steelers guys, I still think the Steelers have the edge because they are more physical. But athletically, Marvin's finally got a group of linebackers that can, the gap's starting to close a little bit, I would say. Manny Lawson is one of those guys who can drop back into coverage. And also, if you needed an outside rusher, he doesn't do that a lot here, but if you needed him to do it, he could. Thomas Howard, just extremely athletic and a good run stopper. And Mal Lugo, while he was in, is one of those guys who's got good matchups, too, against the tight ends or running backs. I think the past couple years, especially in the middle, Dahani Jones, a great leader, but Dahani Jones couldn't go one-on-one in pass coverage with a tight end or a running back to save his life, and that really hurt this team. So athletically they're on par. I think the one thing that's shocked me about this defensive unit is when you look at last year's opening day lineup, and then this year there were six new starters and a seventh guy who changed positions. And the fact that in a lockout year, especially these guys coming in the first week of training camp and not being able to practice, how quickly it has gelled has been, I think, to me, the biggest surprise, and how the fourth or fifth week of the regular season, they were a number one defense.
We talked about that. Dave and I have talked about that extensively with the Steelers coming into the season. You would have thought that being an experienced group, the lockout, if it's going to benefit anybody, it's going to benefit a team like the Steelers. So we were surprised as well with that. Can you tell us about kind of Andy Dalton's development and maturity and how it went through camp with Gretkowski, and obviously Carson not being there, eventually being traded? And just give us a scouting report on how he's done since the first day of camp, coming in as a second-round pick and a guy who maybe was going to see the field, to a guy who now is a quarterback of a 6-2 team.
I think the biggest thing is this team, as long as Andy didn't fall flat on his face, he was going to be the starting quarterback of this team. Gronkowski was brought in as, He knew the Gruden system from Tampa Bay and what Jay wanted to bring here. And it was a good veteran guy, too, that in case something happened, which did in week one when Dalton injured his wrist and Bruce was able to come in and rally him. I think Dalton was a little tentative at first, but somewhere, I would say around that second preseason game against the Jets, where it looked like Murphy's Law that those first five possessions, and then in the second quarter they finally got their good sustained drive going, and then that carried through the next 3-4 weeks. And in that opener against Cleveland, they scored out their first three possessions, which had never been done in a regular season opener by a Bengals team. I just think he got more confidence. He was able to approach veterans and maybe get in their face a little more. I mean, he's not going to be a screaming quarterback, but when he yells in the huddle or is decisive, he will get his point across. I think Andrew Whitworth said first couple of weeks of training camp, we were kind of straining to hear what Andy was saying in the huddle, and then all of a sudden he just got the confidence and he became the guy. I mean, there's been a lot of during the draft and stuff, there were criticisms about Dalton's arm strength, but this isn't an offense like the past years when Bob Gronkowski was here, where you're going to regularly chuck it 30 or 40 yards down the field. They'll take their shots like they did against Tennessee, and in the one time they did go deep, they drew the pass interference penalty. But this is an offense, and this is a quarterback with the temperament that just get it down the field, manage the game well, and things will happen. And I think Dalton got that confidence with Green. He's got it with Gresham. He's starting to get it with some of the other receivers. Running game's starting to come around, but I think the fact that he can manage the game and has that poise, even when things are going wrong, he's still got that same temperament. That's the thing that has won over this group in this locker room, is that he is such even keel, but also he does show a little bit of that fire at times, which, you know, frankly, Carson really didn't show that fire a lot towards a lot of people. The only yep. time you really saw Carson show that fire is when he had to light something under Chad, or whether there would be a fight on the sidelines that way. But if Dalton's not happy, he'll let it be known to his group.
It's an interesting thing. We've seen it around the league this year, obviously with Cam Newton and a few other guys. I mean, it's so rare coming into before last year, to have rookie quarterbacks come in and be successful. And now we've seen it, you know, with a group of guys. How about the offensive line? Because you look at the list of guys on the offensive line, and maybe some people would recognize Andrew Whitworth's name, but really it's a bunch of guys that people outside of Cincinnati probably have never heard of. How are they playing, and what's the status of those guys?
Well, I think Andre Smith, most people would recognize that name due to the fact that the first couple years people were trying to label him as a draft bust, and he hardly saw the field due to injuries. But I think Andre has made great improvements this year, and he's finally healthy, and he has that confidence. I think when he went up against Indianapolis and Mathis, he totally shut him down. Now, he still will make some mistakes with penalties and at pass coverage at times, but compared to the first couple years, he's finally taken over that job at right tackle, and you hardly have to write about him because he doesn't make that many crucial mistakes. Guard play, Bobby Williams is finally back in there. He missed the first four games because of a diuretic that was found. Nate Livings, I think, still on the left side, struggles at times. Kyle Cook, he signed an extension during the offseason, but he has really been kind of that steady center that there was a 2-3 year lapse here between Richie Branham and Cook, with Eric Guychuk, I think his nickname around here was the human pancake, because defensive linemen would just bowl him over like no one's business, and that does it. That doesn't happen with Kyle Cook. I think run blocking wise, it's been inconsistent. Pass protection, though, has improved, but you know there's still some problems here and there. But for the most part, I think they're third or fourth in least number of sacks allowed. They've done pretty well.
Joe, the Steelers' offense, of course, now is more of a vertical threat. Then I guess we'd like to say in Steeler Nation, you know, it's not your daddy's Steelers anymore as far as the run goes. And it seems, going back and watching some of these Bengals games, like I sat down and watched last night, that the Bengals defense, I mean, they're pretty stout. I mean, you really got to tip your hat to them. How would you suggest the Steelers attack them? It looks obvious that they're not going to be able to run too well on them. Is this a team that you just have to attack the middle of the field 10, 15 yards at a time and then take occasional shot over the top? You know, tell us and our listeners how you would attack them, having watching them.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the fact that Ben has three straight 300-yard games, and I think my first reaction was, holy Bubby Brister, what's going on there? I think the one way you can attack the Bengals, and I think Seattle showed this, was go vertical on them. And I think with Antonio Brown and Mike Wallace, That's a pair of deep threats that you guys haven't had in a very long time. And if you can attack that way and get those chunk yards, I think that's going to be a big thing. Mendenhall has had good games on this team, and in the first half, this defense has struggled when it's come to running back. So if Mendenhall can get 60, 70, 75 yards in that first half running wise, and then you take it, you take your shots deep that way, I think that's going to be the biggest thing. And the Steelers are going to have to attack them in the first half, because unlike past years when the Bengals were a first half team and then teams would rally on them in the second half, the Bengals have been that second-half team. I think they're allowing only 19 points in the fourth quarter now through the first half of the year. So if you're going to get up on this team, you're going to have to do it in the first half. I think Tennessee was pretty confident with a 10-point lead at the half, and then they were able to do nothing in the first half. And Reggie Nelson, still vulnerable at times as a safety. And when this team plays nickel, there's still some cornerback issues. I think late in the first half against Tennessee, Kelly Jennings kind of lost coverage on his man. So if you can take those shots deep, then especially in the first half, I think that's going to be the biggest key.
The Bengals seem to have made, over this past offseason here, some good personnel decisions. And, as someone outside who always likes to tease the Bengals, of course, in Steeler Nation, it's really uncharacteristic how good some of these moves have been. Is some of the attitude inside of the Bengal fan base now, is it more of a, hey, show us a little bit more, we've been down this road before, getting off to a good start here and all? Is the attitude kind of changing towards Mike Brown right now? What's going on?
I think the attitude nationally is changing towards Mike Brown, but I think locally it hasn't. It's almost like, okay, if you surprise everyone and go to the playoffs this year, they're on track for a winning season, which even a winning season nobody thought at the beginning of the year. I think Peter King had them 3-13 and having the first pick in the NFL draft. I had them 5-11 at the beginning of the year, so they've already exceeded national expectations. I think the biggest thing among this fan base is, congratulations, you've done it 1 year, but this is a team that hasn't had back-to-back playoff appearances in 30 years. You got to show up more than 1 year. They feel like they were teased in 2005. They were teased in 2009. The biggest thing too that the fan base too kind of wonders is, if it wasn't for that 2005 playoff game and Palmer's knee injury, how the course of history would change. If Shane Graham made that kick in the 2006 finale against the Steelers in Cincinnati, and you got back-to-back playoff appearances, how would that have changed the course of history with these guys? But I think they really want to see down the line whether this thing's going to continue or whether it's a one-year wonder. It's almost like you got to show us more. In 2012 and 2013, the funny thing is here, some people aren't even talking about the second half of the year. They're trying to forecast the 2012 draft with the two first-round draft picks that this team has through the Palmer deal, and you know this team also has an extra draft pick in the later rounds after trading Ocho Cinco to New England. So it's almost like, okay, yeah, nice job this year and everything, but you really got to show us down the line what you're going to do with kind of an abundance of riches right now.
We're talking with Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer. You can follow Joe on Twitter, at Joe Reedy, R-E-E-D-Y, this week to get all the latest Bengals information. Joe, before we let you go, why don't you just tell us, with 8 games left in the season, 4 against the Steelers, 4 against the Ravens, Steeler fans, you know, had the Steelers won that game against Baltimore on Sunday night, I think we'd kind of be coasting along here saying this team is 7-2. Win or lose against the Bengals, this team is certainly a playoff team, and you know, this game Sunday against the Bengals is not particularly significant, obviously rather win than lose. Having lost that game, this game now takes on gigantic proportions in terms of how the Steelers and their fans are looking at things. 6-3, obviously, if the Bengals win this game, the Steelers are in a big hole. Is the game taking on kind of that kind of significance in Cincinnati, both in the locker room and around town?
I think around town it is. In the locker room, it's Steeler Week is enough of a pressure point alone with this team that they get up for that. Just ignore all the playoff consequences and everything. I kind of did the playoff picture yesterday, and the biggest thing is if the Steelers lose this game, they're 0-3 in the division. You might as well forget division title in one of the first 4 seeds and concentrate on the 5th or 6th wild card seed right now, because you know the tiebreaker against Baltimore is going to loom large, and if you go 0-3 in division, that's almost too steep of a hole to come back from. For the Bengals, I think it's if you can get confidence and beat Pittsburgh, you're 2-0 in the division. They've played well against Baltimore in the past. Mike Zimmer seems to have a formula to contain Joe Flacco. Flacco hasn't had the big games against this team that he's had against others. So They're kind of looking at it that way, that this 4-game division stretch is enough of a tough stretch as it is, but also these guys kind of have experience doing Ravens and Steelers back-to-back, because in 2009, in weeks 8 and 9, they hosted Baltimore and then came to Heinz Field and happened to sweep that and went 6-0 in the division that year. So they've got experience with this run. And I think for a young team, having a division stretch in the middle of the year is a good thing for them. And if they want to be that team that continues to surprise a lot of people, 2-2 at worst is what they can do in this stretch. But I think everybody's focusing on the rivalry in the locker room and the playoff talk. It can be delayed a couple more weeks, but you know the fan base, besides Steelers coming into town, are already kind of trying to look at the next 8 weeks. And I think all of us in the division too are trying to figure out whether this year, I think in the past 10 wins have gotten you a playoff berth. With what's happening in the AFC East right now, I think we're all trying to figure out whether 11 is truly going to have to be that magic number this week or not. But I think big week in the conference. Besides this game, you got New England and the Jets and a couple others. Buffalo's got to go to Dallas. So I think all of us in the North are hoping that the East starts beating each other up and everybody starts coming back to the pack. And that'll kind of help the wild card equation a little bit for everyone.
Dave, you want to finish up? Joe, you want to give us a prediction for the result on Sunday?
I've been oscillated so much on it, and this is probably one of the toughest predictions I've had to make in a while. I think for me, the biggest deciding factor is that the Steelers haven't had a bye week yet, and coming on the road, I think that's going to probably be a determining factor, and I can see the Bengals winning a 24-21 game. But, you know, I can that'll probably be the prediction I go against, just from the fact that I think the Steelers right now are a little bit of a tired team, and still some injury factor that if the Bengals were going to get these guys at the right time, it's certainly going to be this week.
Yeah, that's a good point. And with you know, as banged up as they are with the linebackers, I mean, it definitely is going to be huge. I mean, I expect Lamar Woodley to be out. They've lost Emmanuel Sanders as well, too, this week. So you've got good reason, especially with the way that defense is playing as well. And, Joe, hey, we read your stuff all the time. You're a longtime beat writer with the Bengals, and it does not go unnoticed. You really do a good job and are great at your craft. And rivalry aside, it's always fun reading your work.
I appreciate it. It's all, you know, they're just something different about Steeler Week and the fans coming in and everything, and Ben with his ties here, and, you know, Marvin, his history with the Steelers, and also LeBeau, his history with the Bengals. It's just, it's always a special 2 weeks when it happens. And, you know, the way things are going, who knows, that game in Heinz Field in early December could be a NBC game.
Absolutely. Joe, appreciate your time. We'll look forward to catching up with you later in the season when you guys come to Pittsburgh. Thanks for being with Dave and Dave on the Terrible Podcast.
Thank you.
That's going to wrap things up for today. We'll be back with you Friday with our preview of Steelers-Bengals, 1 o'clock in Cincinnati, at Paul Brown Stadium. And, of course, we'll have our picks for the week. And everything goes according to plan, Dave. Hopefully I'll be on the show on Friday.
Yeah, you better be here. You missed the last couple of Fridays. I'm going to track you down one way or the other.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, as always, for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.